speaking on the issues that impact. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick today, Monday, the 29th of April, 2024. What a date. These dates are going to go down in history because extraordinary events are unfolding across the United States in university campuses from Florida to Washington State, down to the border with Mexico and right the way over to Maine. A second American Revolution. Well, we're not far off it. The war in Gaza, the annihilation of the Palestinian people, has exposed deep fissures in American society. On the one hand, we have mostly university students, supported a lot by their faculty professors, occupying the common grounds of their schools and colleges, and they are faced with an increasingly intolerant and authoritarian, indeed violent, response by state and federal authorities. At the top of the hour there, we heard from Alan Dershowitz, who seems determined to label anti-genocide campaigners as potential terrorists, seemingly unaware of the fact that 35,000 Palestinians have been murdered in the last 6 months, including 15,000 children. You don't get more terroristic than that. I'm delighted to say that joining me now to have a look at what's going on across America in a story which has finally made it to the top of the news, simply by virtue of the sheer scale of the protests, although I can't help thinking there's being grossly mischaracterized by the legacy corporate media, which is slavishly devoted to Israel. Am I right, Brian Hesher-McLain? Glad that you can join me. Is the coverage of the protests all skewed entirely one way in an attempt to portray the protesters as anti-Semitic rather than anti-war?
100%. 100% it is. And there are, people that make great media for that talking point that have been deployed there. But when you zoom out a little bit and you look at the actual numbers, it's pretty big. I mean, I think I mentioned last time I was on with you, I went to what they now call Cal Poly Humboldt. That was a new one to me. It used to be Humboldt State, but it's Cal Poly Humboldt now. But yes, there is occupations happening in some of the buildings where I took classes. And out here in Texas, well, actually, it's all over the place. There, you can look at heat maps of universities where protests are taking place, and there are dozens and dozens of them all over the place. And out here in Texas, in Austin at UT, there is a very big gathering happening right now with a massive police force there. It's funny because I thought all of the Austin PD and all those guys, I thought they were lacking enforcement power, defunded in the wake of George Floyd and BLM riots, where we did not see, ironically, we did not see this kind of police presence. So it's a very interesting day, Basil.
Yeah, it certainly is. A lot of conservative commentators, of course, very keen on free speech, the First Amendment, defending the Constitution, seeing it as coming under threat from Democrats primarily, and of course, referencing January the 6th and the entirely legitimate protest against the theft of the election. They don't seem so keen on these protests. The double standards are very obvious and egregious, aren't they?
Yeah, very interesting. Even Donald Trump himself saying to shut this down. It's really interesting to see how mainstream conservatives react to this. The overwhelming sentiment I'm seeming to get here from the mainstream conservative pundits out there is that this is all George Soros backed. These are idiot, geopolitically illiterate students, and things like this. But, and that may be the case in some cases, but some of these rallies, most of these rallies are so big, and I'm not seeing any sort of representation for both sides. All I see are the most, the clashing, the salacious signs, the outrageous comments, people, having angry experiences or bitter debates. That seems to be what we're being shown, but we never get shown, that any of the dozens of professors who, are well versed on the topic. They don't seem to be getting any airtime. Students from Jewish Voices for Peace, for example, no airtime there. So yeah, it seems that the narrative control is in full swing, and conservatives, for once in this case, they seem to be all on board with censoring and militarized police crackdowns.
There was an incident, I think it was at Northwestern a day or two ago, where somebody shouted, "Kill the Jews." And this prompted a few arrests and a crackdown, only for footage to emerge for it to be absolutely indisputable that that shout had come from pro-Israel counter-protesters in a deliberate attempt to confuse the situation and inflame tensions. Absolutely extraordinary stuff. Also, people wearing pro-genocide t-shirts I've seen today on the Israeli side saying, "Make Gaza Jewish again." In other words, calling for the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. I don't think the media response is actually doing the authoritarian state slash Zionist side of the argument any favors. I think if anything, it's becoming clearer and clearer to people of conscience, should I say, just how manipulated they've been. And it's very much a generational thing. You've got the baby boomers, a sort of 45, 50 plus, who have been marinated in pro-Israel propaganda for so many decades. That they bleed blue and white. And on the other hand, you've got a younger generation of better informed, self-educated people who are immune to it, and in fact, who see the other side of the coin very, very clearly. And like no other issue I've seen in the last 30, 40 years, I mean, including COVID, the Iraq War, or anything else, this one provokes inflamed passions, anger, raw emotion, and a total lack of an attempt to find or understand the other's point of view that's off the charts compared to any other issue. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, that does seem to be the case. And it's really interesting when you compare and contrast, because let's face it, a lot of these young people are leftists. They are generally, of Democrat orientation. Many of them, I would suspect, are at this point are independent because of, they're getting a little bit older. And they've realized that we've been lied to about the power politics and about the zeitgeist. And, they spent the last 40 years training liberal students in colleges here in the United States to look for victimization, to stand up against victimization, to be sensitive about racism. And a lot of that was packaged and presented to them. Between the rise of Trump and then again in the rise of BLM in the wake of what happened with George Floyd, and now they're seeing what's going on with Israel and with Palestine, and if you're looking for victimization and marginalization, you need not look any further for a insane apartheid state. that is wrapped in so much propaganda. And you know, now that they have the ability to be on TikTok and see other people's perspectives, well, it's no wonder they want to shut TikTok down. It's no wonder they want to shut college campuses down. It's no wonder they want to do mass arrests and narrative control on this topic, because this, you know, you saw how excited they got, how fervent they were when it came to Black Lives Matter and things like that. And I would argue there's a lot of propaganda and misguidedness that's been applied to, you know, those topics. But when you look at what's gone on in Palestine over the decades, it's hard to not see real marginalization, real state victimization against marginalized people. And those kids at our colleges here, sorry guys, but they are programmed to react to that in this day and age.
Absolutely, Hesha. I'd go so far as to call it state terrorism on the part of the Israelis. There's a very interesting piece by the Australian journalist Caitlin Johnston published today, opining why it's taken this generation so long, 6 months, 7 months, to object to the genocide in Gaza as strongly as they do. And that's because it's a democratic administration in charge, the so-called moderates, the adults in the room, the defenders of democracy. Remember, democracy is on the ballot in November, although from the pictures we're all seeing online about the violent attacks on the student encampments, anyone would think this was these pictures were from China or Iran or one of the other repressive regimes that the US is always so quick to condemn, but no, they're in the United States. And her argument is that for 6 months, students thought that at some point the United States would say, enough is enough of this killing, of this murder. We're now going to finally rein in the Israelis, maybe even reprimand them to some extent. We can't allow this to go on. Da da da, and they've woken up to the fact that that isn't going to happen. That basically the blank check goes on and on and on, regardless of the suffering of the Palestinian people, and that although not saying it out loud, the quiet part that Biden, Blinken, and the rest are endorsing is de facto the same as the fascist elements of the Israeli government, that there are no innocent civilians in Gaza and that they must all be wiped out, because we never hear anything from the administration to contradict that position.
Right, right. And I can kind of understand why it's taken them 6 months to get this far, because there's been a lot of lip service, have been a lot of empty words coming from the Biden administration on this. There's been sort of this soft sort of, you know, back pedal to it. But of course, when they go to vote, when they go to, you know, push a bill, when Kamala Harris goes and speaks before AIPAC, it's always the empty words go away, and it is, we are with you, we're supporting you, and we're gonna keep sending you the same amount of money we're sending and more if you need it. So I think, and conservatives were very conservative, mainstream conservatives seem to be doing their best to make this a right versus left thing in the country, because that's what everything has become, from COVID to, you know, education to gender. All these things have all become political. So people are realizing now, wait a minute, the whole politicization of this is not working out. You know, the algebra, the political algebra is not working out. And both sides, they're seeing that both sides support this in lockstep. So I think that is that's definitely taking the genie out of the bottle.
It's a bit of a wake-up moment, isn't it? There are only two candidates in the upcoming election who would demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza without preconditions, and they are Cornel West and Jill Stein. Jill Stein was assaulted with a bicycle and then arrested earlier this week, detained for 5 hours. Quite extraordinary stuff. Meanwhile, the epicenter of the protest was Columbia University in New York, of course, where, as I speak, there is a tense standoff between university administrators and the protesters who were due to leave the college lawns at 2 p.m. Eastern today. It's now 20 minutes past five, sunny afternoon by the looks of it there in New York. Most notably, a lot of faculty have joined the protesters. So it's a very strange situation with professors standing shoulder to shoulder with protesters, huge numbers of tents, I should add. It all looks very well organized at the moment. Columbia has said they're not going to send in police. One wonders whether at state level they may be forced to change their mind. Earlier today, Columbia's president, Minush Shafiq, said negotiations with protest leaders to dismantle their encampment on the college campus have broken down. They are demanding the complete cessation of all relationship between the college and particularly companies like Boeing, who, of course, supply parts for the planes that are killing people, and a total divestment from essentially from the wider Zionist power configuration. Now, that's a big deal for a university like Columbia, which relies on donations. So enmeshed has the military-industrial complex become with universities and places of higher education in the United States. And so enmeshed with the military-industrial complex is the state of Israel, that this is a Gordian knot to unravel, and one that will cost universities billions of dollars in endowment should they be willing or able to do so. So this, you know, it looks to me like a case of, you know, irresistible force meets immovable object.
It could very well turn into that. You know, I've been tracking the thing going down on in UT at the University of Texas here in Austin, and the numbers are pretty large. The numbers are very large. And I'm also looking at the Cal Poly Humboldt University Senate resolution here. And it appears from what I'm reading as of just the last 5 days or so that Cal Poly Humboldt State is, they say Cal Poly Humboldt State Senate Executive Committee acting on behalf of the University Senate calls for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And they say the students, faculty, and staff of Cal Poly Humboldt are deeply committed to peace and the humane treatment of all people. So, you know, it seems like we're seeing sort of a agreement between a lot of the faculty and the students at many campuses.
Yes.
And this is their resolution. You know, they are resolved to it, and they understand that students in the United States have a right to protest. So it is sort of a big deal that we see all these militarized police out there pushing people around, arresting people, you know, acting in ways that they certainly didn't act at J6, at, you know, BLM riots, George Floyd riots, Antifa riots. So the third rail has definitely been touched.
Absolutely. It seems conservatives seem willing to basically trash the American Constitution on Israel's behalf. It's as simple as that. One response, Portland State University, one of the first university administrators to distance their school from a major weapons manufacturer. They have said they are going to pause their donations from Boeing. But elsewhere, Harvard and University of California, for example, are holding the line. Harvard, which has the largest endowment at $51 billion, says it opposes calls for a policy of boycotting Israel and its academic institutions, of course, which students are also demanding. The University of California, which has an endowment of $169 billion for its 10 campuses, also said it opposes calls for boycott against any divestment from Israel. of course, the state troopers can go in and beat everybody up and smash up all the tents, but they're not going to change the hearts and minds of the students like that.
No, I don't think they are. And I think a lot of students right now are probably looking in the rearview mirror and thinking about a couple of years ago when the mainstream media told them that they needed to support Ukraine, that Trump was part of Russia, therefore Russia bad, Ukraine good. And now they're looking at what's going on and they realize that the war machine here in the United States and in the Atlanticist bloc is way more odious than they thought. And they're realizing that all conflicts are involving way more propaganda than they thought. And they're looking at independent media like us and other places, and they're seeing, oh my God, more than 500,000 Ukrainian men and boys were deleted with all that money we sent over there. And many of them are probably right now wishing that they would have been doing these protests a couple of years ago when Ukraine kicked off. So I think that the whole politicization of Ukraine is going to fall to the wayside in the wake of all this also.
Well, I can only hope you're right. You know, it's just about the most encouraging thing to have happened in the United States in the last 25 years, if you ask me, or possibly even longer. You know, it's on a bigger scale now than the anti-Vietnam War protests, just when we thought the anti-war movement had been propagandized and browbeaten into complete obsolescence and extinction. Whoa. Suddenly there's an American spring happening. I don't know if you've seen some of the extraordinary memes doing the rounds on social media, a girl being bundled into the back of a police car under arrest, depicted as the Statue of Liberty, for one, and protesters in Iran showing pictures, banners made up from graphics from social media of American students getting arrested. I mean, what's going on is really undermining, in the eyes of the world, the fig leaf that America has clung to for all these decades, that it somehow, is this beacon of democracy and freedom, and we don't do things the way you do in China, Iran, or anywhere else, right?
Mm-hmm. Truly. Absolutely. I noticed in Mexico City today, another enormous protest for peace in the Middle East, peace in Gaza, an end to the bombing campaign, cessation of violence broke out in Mexico City. Very, very large, you know. So we're seeing them everywhere, all around the world right now. So, yeah, it's definitely a bad look for the United States and for their allies in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think the Obama administration, well, there's a Freudian slip for you. Do you think the Biden administration is self-aware enough to realize not only how bad this looks, but the extent to which it's destroying its own base with this crackdown and a refusal really to engage with the essence of what the protesters are talking about, are demanding, which is simply an end to genocide?
That's a really good question. And I can only speculate, but I think that they don't care. I think that this is exactly what the plan was to do this, because you know the main goal here in the United States is to polarize us against each other, and you know they tried that, did a pretty good job of that with Trump, did a pretty good job of that with Biden, did a great job of that with jabs, mRNA shots, COVID, colds, shutdowns, lockdowns, all that stuff. They did a great job polarizing everybody against each other, but the people keep coming back together. You know, we saw a big fall off between everybody when the vaccine came out. And with enough time, people started standing shoulder to shoulder again and saying, you know what, the people that were hesitant were right. And, you know, you can only do that so many times. You can only tell people it's a crisis so many times and we're here to help. and then completely grift them, take their freedoms away, victimize people, end up with a trail of dead bodies suddenly died. You know what I mean? It's so I think that they know exactly what they're doing. They've politicized it at a slow speed until they were ready to go big with it, and now it's gone big. And I honestly, Basil, I think that they're probably relishing in what they're seeing right now, because what they've done is they've radicalized people on the right now to call for authoritarianism in the name of identity politics. And that's maybe something that was a big thing on their to-do list.
Good point, Brian. Finally, America first, supposedly. Are some on the right waking up to the fact that it's really Israel first?
Not enough. Not enough. Some are, but not enough. I don't think people realize how many dual citizens we have. I don't think they realize exactly how much sway the lobby has, but we're getting there.
And Hesham McLean, you'll be back in half an hour with State of the Nation, if I'm not wrong. Who
You
have you
are
got on
correct.
tonight?
Yeah, you're correct,
Good.
sir. Yeah, Timothy Shea and I will be there, and we've got a great show lined up. We're going to have Andrew Langer, Mike Netter, Joe Hoft, Ron Martinelli, and Scott Silverman, and James Patrick Riley. We got a great show lined up, so encourage you to stay tuned to TNT.
Always. Brian Hesham McLean, thank you so much for joining me tonight on the Patrick Henningsen Show.
All right, thanks for having me, Basil.
We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, I'll be joined by the British actor and comedian Phil Zimmerman to ask and hopefully answer the question, controlled opposition, is it a thing? We'll be right back after this short break.
TNT's Jason Olborne.
In today's Australian newspaper, a horrific hit piece was delivered against Julian Assange, with the headline "Assange's Sordid Tale of Treachery." It reads, "Julian Assange is a criminal, a fabulist, and an undisciplined, arrogant, work-shy fraud who lacks an education while remaining a mannerless vulgarian." The WikiLeaks founder is no journalist. Well, that's Alan Howe taking no prisoners, himself a history and obituaries editor, deciding to write a 9-minute piece to basically pull apart a fellow Australian as he tries to get out of prison, where he's been locked up for 5 years in maximum security for the work of being a journalist.
Weekends with Jason Olborne on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Second break. And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine. In for Patrick today, Monday, the 29th of April, 2024. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by comedian and actor Phil Zimmerman, who has had a burning question on his mind, and I can quite understand why, because it often occupies dissidents and assorted alternative thinkers, shall we say. And that's the question of controlled opposition. In other words, people who appear to be batting for the right side, but are in fact promoting some kind of limited hangout, or indeed trying to corral people into preordained establishment or government positions, taking the edge off genuine, you know, grievance, genuine opposition to the egregious excesses of the governments we find ourselves living under, put it that way. But Phil, great that you can join us on the program. We're using as a starting point the article by Caitlin Johnston from 2019, in which she quite rightly points out multiple instances in which movements like the 1968 Chicago DNC protest and Peter Camejo's 1976 anti-establishment presidential campaign were so heavily infiltrated by opaque government agencies that one in out of every six people in them was secretly working for the feds. I've no doubt that's true. I'm not sure whether that's the case with the campus protests we're seeing across the United States now, but there is certainly a tendency amongst paranoid conspiracy theorists to point at people who are criticizing establishment narratives and just simply accuse them without any evidence of being so-called controlled opposition.
Well, yes, that's always been a thing, hasn't it, Basil? And it always struck me as a bit of an odd idea, really, the idea of controlled opposition. The first thing being that I don't really subscribe to the idea of this, of super elite people meeting in a smoky room somewhere and kind of, you know, figuring out the percentages, how much truth can we allow this person or that person to say and still stay ahead of the game? You know, how many own goals can you score in a game of football and still win? You know what I mean? And, you know, you take
West
people
Ham
like...
Fan. A West Ham fan, yeah.
Well, exactly, yes. There was the very famous case in non-league football, and I remember this from my time as a football journalist because I covered it, of a non-league, quite a high-level non-league club where a defender scored three own goals in one game. I think they're all pretty good goals as well, and one from about 25 yards, I think. And I think there's been a few cases of that in women's football more recently. So, a good point. It does happen. I don't think West Ham would win the game. Once some powerful, truthful information has been revealed, I mean, to start with, anyone that attains the status of credible opposition must, by definition, have put out there a fair bit of, you know, of truthful and powerful information to start with, right? So you do start thinking, well, you know, how are they going to control that? And once that's out, I mean, even if you just go down the pub, Basil, me and you talking down the pub, you tell me something, I tell it to one other person, someone else, it spreads in a domino effect. And of course, now with the internet, it spreads massively. So, you know, it's really, I think, a matter of common sense for each person to decide whether they believe the information rather than trying to work out, is this person either 100% brilliant and always right about everything, i.e. they never make a mistake, or are they batting for the opposition? I don't think it really matters. What matters is the information being revealed damaging the narrative? Is it revealing something about the narrative? Yeah, and is it doing some damage to it? And I think we can see, as you said earlier, the what's happening on the campuses looks like a really powerful grassroots movement. And I think that the Zionists are going to have a big trouble trying to infiltrate that.
Indeed, trying to get that genie back in the bottle, I think, will prove completely and utterly impossible. Caitlin makes the point that indeed it is narrative that, you know, has become really the buzzword of the 21st century, hasn't it? We didn't used to talk in those terms in the 20th century. I mean, I have been following politics and the news for decades, and narrative control simply wasn't a thing back in the 1970s or 80s. And now it's absolutely central. I think a lot more people are aware of the extent to which so-called regular news services, what we call the legacy media, corporate media, lying corporate media, etc., do try and control the way they think about issues, not simply by who they platform, but also, of course, who they don't platform, propaganda by omission being equally important. But to come back to the whole controlled opposition question, I always think a good indicator of the veracity or authenticity of anybody who comes into the public eye is the way they are subsequently treated by the establishment and the establishment media. A few recent examples: Andrew Bridgen, the Conservative MP who was expelled from the party, an unusual thing to happen. He now sits as an independent because he spoke up against the vaccines in Parliament. Simple as that. And used a comparison which was a sort of the third rail. As a result, he's been vilified and is sort of ostracized by his fellow MPs. I don't think anybody would voluntarily put themselves through that, as it were, through that sort of emotional and professional ringer if they were in any way simply faking it, because that's essentially what controlled opposition is. The suggestion is that you're actually secretly working for the intelligence agencies or something. Now, the simple fact is that COINTELPRO demonstrated, and this is everybody's true today, I've no doubt, that the security services have their assets dotted throughout the mainstream media. We don't know who they are, but we can know them by their words. It's as simple as that. And they tend to want to demonize anybody who strays off the opinion corridor reservation. For example, one of the most extreme examples in Britain would be David Icke. He's had his visas to Europe cancelled, and he was humiliated repeatedly on television, most notably, of course, by Terry Wogan back in the 1980s, when he had his personal spiritual awakening and he began to see the world in a very different light. There's no way he would have put himself through that simply to deflect attention from real issues. And in the United States, of course, you've got people like Alex Jones. Well, he's been sued for billions of dollars. He wouldn't be putting himself through that. Now, everybody has a limited understanding of the way the world works. Nobody on the planet at the moment that I can think of is omniscient in terms of just how this incredibly complicated structure that we live in is put together. So when you say, when people say controlled narrative, on the one hand, you've got people sort of secretly working for the authorities, perhaps. On the other hand, you've got a controlled opposition who are people who are simply not sufficiently aware of the fact that they are heavily propagandized, right? So they're controlled, not directly, but indirectly by, for want of a better expression, their own ignorance, Phil.
Well, yes, absolutely. And talking of ignorance, I mean, of course, Bridgen has received a lot of stick and accusations that he is controlled opposition. Now, he was criticized for, it took 3 years to wake up. He voted for the mandatory vaccination for care workers, which I think that's surprising. But I mean, as you say, he's put himself in a really difficult position whereby he's, you know, been thrown out of the Conservative Party and is a lone voice speaking out for, you know, the vaccine damaged in the Commons. So, you know, if you were to make a detailed study of Bridgen to try and find out what kind of a person is he, you know, is he an angel? Is he, you know, has he got blood on his hands to some extent? Surely what we want is for people that have initially been on the other side of the issue to have the courage to face up to the truth and to speak up and do what's right, which Bridgen has done, you know. So, I mean, and of course, you mentioned David Icke. I mean, the case with David Icke, he had to endure years of doing shows to two men and a dog. And, you know, his book's not selling at all. And now he's, you know, he's selling out all over the world where he is allowed to appear, that is, because he's been banned from a lot of Europe. And you know, he has made that transformation for one reason only, that a lot of the things that he has been talking about for years, you know, like, for instance, in prior to 9/11, he was saying that events will be engineered and staged to create enormous fear, and which would stimulate the Muslim world into a holy war. This was in January 2001. He also said, don't be surprised if the US finds itself in a manipulated war during this Adams administration. You will see monsters being created in the public mind to justify this action. And then in January 99, previous to that, he had said between 2000 and 2002, the US will suffer a major attack on a large city. You know, and of course, he also correctly predicted the Ukraine war, that pandemics would be used as a weapon against the people, digital currency. And of course, the human mind will be plugged into the internet by 2030. I mean, if he is controlled opposition, that's rather a lot of information for them to give away, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Although some people say that elites like to announce what they're going to do in advance, because for various sort of esoteric reasons, that means that the bad effects don't rebound on them as badly as they otherwise might. I don't want to get into those particular high weeds, but a great quote here from Caitlin's article: have no heroes, trust nobody but your own inner sense maker. I'm inclined to agree with her on that score, aren't you, Phil?
Definitely, yes. I mean, and the other thing about this is that, you know, from the point of view of activists and freedom fighters, truth seekers, is that we should, you know, celebrate the fact that, you know, that so much truth has come out and is coming out, because we're coming from a situation of beginning to recognize the fact that the level of control and evil and inversion that has been, you know, to the fore for so long now, such a long, long time, is so extreme. And so any type of truth coming out is an advancement, and we should celebrate the fact that we are actually putting pressure on the system. And that's why they have to put out viruses in the language like conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer, anti-Semite, climate denier. And I think the purpose of the controlled opposition label is to discourage people from thinking that we have made any progress. And the idea that there's no one out there we can actually trust, and that is very far from the case. And we are all powerful, and we have the power to know the truth and pass it on to others. And that's what we need to focus on, rather than listening to all the bullshit.
I like that term, language virus, to describe those anti-intellectual put-downs that you listed there, Phil. I might be inclined to modify it to lexicon virus. Other people mm-hmm. talk about mind viruses, like flat earthism, for example, a completely irrelevant nonsense and distraction. Crucial these days, of course, is that, you know, we're not ever going to agree with somebody, even anybody, about everything. It's been extraordinary over the last couple of years. I've found myself on occasions applauding Republican lawmakers in Congress when skewering Biden administration representatives for the alleged corruption of that administration and its failure to uphold the basic tenets of the American Constitution. And yet those same individuals are now shredding the Constitution on behalf of Israel in the most abhorrent way. People can find it very confusing that somebody with whom they agree so strongly about one particular issue, perhaps the COVID narrative or something, can on another issue like Ukraine reveal themselves to be a warmongering psychopath. So what we have to do really is endorse not individuals so much as standpoints, and create our own unique set of standpoints, which we, you know, resolutely stand behind, as it were, even if they're made up of a mosaic of opinions from people across the political spectrum.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, we just have to keep standing up for what we believe in, and revealing what's truthful and what is based on humanistic values, you know, because the point we're at now, I mean, just to expand on what you were saying, I mean, it can be very discouraging. And it was quite shocking for me to see RFK Jr., who had been such a kind of heroic figure, really, during the coronavirus fiasco, nice nightmare, to see that, what, you know, he's just batting for Israel on the genocide thing. That's a very hard thing to get your head round, really. Because a man demonstrates courage and compassion, then in one moment seems to flush it down the toilet in the next, you know. So, you know, that's a tricky one. That's a head scratcher, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly is. Speaking of politicians, we are so badly served at the moment, Phil, on both sides of the Atlantic. If you want to talk about controlled opposition, ultimately you couldn't have a more egregious example than Sir Keir Starmer, who is so
don't
controlled.
Get me started, Basil. Don't get me started.
That he isn't really opposition at all. So, you know, is
what
there
is
such
he?
A thing? Yeah, well, a good question. You know,
what is he? I mean, he let Jimmy Savile off the hook twice when he was the director of public prosecutions. He doesn't seem to know his arse from his elbow on any of the political questions relating to the election. He on live radio said that it was quite fine and dandy for the Palestinians to be deprived of electricity and water. It's just supported the genocide. And I don't know what kind of, I mean, you know, some of the things that leveled at Ike are that, you know, about him criticizing, talking about lizards being the source of all this globalist stuff. And people talk about that lizard temperament. But I can't really get my head around, you know, speaking about Netanyahu, Sunak, Blinken, Rachel Maddow and Starmer as lizards, because frankly, I like animals and I find that is an insult to lizards. Lizards are pretty damn cool, and there's nothing cool about that lot, particularly Starmer. They should be flushed down the sewer of history as far as I'm concerned, and that would be too good a fate for them.
Strong words, Phil. I must admit, I find myself slightly surprised to hear you say that. Yeah, there's no effective opposition in the UK except from the two parties either side of what I call the neoliberal fascists, who are government and 100% controlled opposition. In other words, the Workers' Party of Great Britain on the one hand and Reform on the other. As far as I know, I'm very interested to get a spokesman from Reform here on TNT soon to ask them about where they stand on Ukraine, because they've made more sort of peaceable noises. The Workers' Party GB being the only party that is genuinely sound, in my view, in other words, promoting peace both in Ukraine and the Middle East. And there's certainly nothing controlled about George Galloway, is there?
Absolutely not. He's like a controlled explosion in the Commons, isn't he? But under his own power, you know. So it's good to see him in there. And his show is getting a huge amount of listeners and viewers worldwide. So that's very encouraging.
Well, more encouraging really is that there's a chance. I was talking to Chris Williamson last week that his party could break up I mean, it's a big ask with the first past the post system in Britain, but there's just a chance that the two-party duopoly that the government and 100% controlled opposition that will become the government, that duopoly could be broken up at the next election. Bill Zimmerman, actor and comedian, what are you up to at the moment, very quickly?
I'm making an album soon, Basil, with some, it'll be some protest songs on it, including Lines in the Sky, and a zombie video. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I look forward to that, and we'll have you on again very soon. I'm Basil Valentine. Do hope you've enjoyed this tonight's edition of the Patrick Henningsen Show. He'll be back, all being well, later in the week. I'll be back same time tomorrow. See you all then, and stay tuned for State of the Nation.